Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. The stock markets took a breather after 9 weeks of strong growth. Crude is showing its seasonal weakness. Ross checks out gold and the U.S. and Canadian dollars. The legendary Larry Williams, publisher of I Really Trade, gives us his take on the markets for the year, his outlook for gold, interest rates, the U.S. and Canadian dollars, and the Chinese economy. Founder of thetrendletter.com, Martin Straith, examines Canada's lack of job growth versus the U.S., where thousands of jobs are still being created. However, are those numbers believable? He says the U.S. government now owes $34 trillion, or just over $100,000 per citizen. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Always good to be with you. And, you know, we got the new year rolled in, and the markets are taking a bit of a breather.
Yeah, they kind of taking a break to start off the year.
Yeah, you know, I guess all those people who, you know, were scared about taking capital gains, they didn't want to pay the taxes, they can do it now. They don't have to file tax returns for this year for another, 16 months or so? But, so this is the, I mean, we've had, 9 weeks straight up in the markets, and then this week has become the first down week after that 9 week run, and that was really part of the classic end of October move, which is the strongest seasonal of the year. You know, there's another one that kicks in here very shortly that generally is good, but not of the magnitude or reliability that you see on that one in the fourth quarter of the year, but. You know, we look for, you do some cycle work, some seasonal work, but the key to me is trying to get some of the emotion out of things, and you do that by looking for patterns and looking for, in my case, extreme readings, and I designed my capitulation and exhaustion models 20, 30 years ago. And the idea was to try and find extremes in there and then look for market reversals from those. And that tries to, you're always going to be emotional when you've got money in the markets and or when you're looking to place it in the market. And this helps to take some of that edge out of it. The tail end of the year, we had upside exhaustion signals in the broad indices, the S&P, the NASDAQ, and then we got the DeMarc signals on the sequentials right into the top. So you got both pattern and momentum that we're seeing that we were ready for a correction. And so far, it was the first 3 days were hard down. Friday's a bit of a pause in the move. We've got, because of the extent of the move and the magnitude of it on the downside, we ended up with oversold signals, the short-term signals on the S&P, the NASDAQ, and the Russell. So a bounce, and probably a little bit more than we saw on Friday, but a bounce is probably in the offing right now. January tends to be, historically was a good month. But in the last 5 or 10 years, it hasn't been as reliable. So I think we could see a bit of a choppiness here as we move through the coming weeks.
What's going on with gold?
Gold ended up with that big move into the into December, not quite matching the spike that happened back at the end of November, but a pretty good run up through 2080 on the spot price. Ran out of momentum up there. But the correction, on the spot price, we closed off at 2045. That still maintains the uptrend, but this is just, it's more of a methodical move right now. Move off the initial low down at 1830 was a good seasonal play. That would typically would last to say 47 to 72 days. And we're now into the back third of that, there might be some more time left in this one. And, normally the gold and the silver markets like to top with a big run in the final days. Usually you get the best part of the move in the last 10% of the time. So hopefully we get a bit more of a spike to the upside than we've seen just now. The support area I've been looking at was 2035 on the cash price. We've kissed that one three times at the tail end of this week and held in here, just seeming to be, without much conviction to the upside. But I think that if it starts to gain some momentum, it really could come to life.
What's going on with crude?
Crude oil, we've got the seasonal low in place. I mean, that happened where it was supposed to back in December. And we had a nice rally from, $68 up to 76, and then retraced back down this week. I think 68.5 to 69 was the bottom end of that. Historically, this likes to double bottom. So we've got that first low in place. And if you put a Bollinger Band on here, you'll find that it's coming around to kiss the Bollinger, the lower Bollinger, so that would be a good area for support. And closing up through 74, 75 would probably be the beginning of the seasonal uptrend, which would historically take you out into March or April. So this one's got a chance to have some pretty good life in here. And when you look at the various markets that have moved and not moved, this is one that's got some potential in it. So many of the other markets have already had big runs in the fourth quarter of last year. Maybe it's time for the oil market to come to life.
What's happening with the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
U.S. dollar had that really strong commitment of traders number a couple of weeks ago, and we bottomed out. We also had one of our sequential nine signals right at the bottom end of the move here just a week ago. So you'd expect to see it bounce well. Historically, the bounce in the dollar index is up to the 20-week moving average, which is around 103.5. We're at 102 and change as of Friday's close. So I think there's still some upside momentum in this that's possible. But if it caps out at that 20-week average and starts to ease back down, that then would portend probably, some strength back in the precious metals. So let's hope that the dollar index doesn't have too much on the upside, that it's just a bit of a pause in the downtrend. And, this was up at 107-ish just a couple of months ago, so it was due for a pretty decent bounce. And say that bounce has probably got a little bit more left in it, up towards the 103.5 range. And then Canadian dollar has been stuck in its trading range. You know, we take a look at how it's doing relative to commodities and oil. It's been holding in quite well, so there's no big signals from that perspective. The interest rate differential between Canadian and U.S. five-year bonds is about minus 0.6%, and that's pretty much normal in here. It means that there's no strong bias to push the dollar higher or lower. So overall, we're stuck in a trading range of 72 to 75 We closed off the week at 74.84, so we're probably at the upper end of that range right now.
Ross, thank you so much for the update.
Good to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. Find him on X at Charts by Ross. Coming up, Larry Williams next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Larry Williams, founder of I Really Trade Online at ireallytrade.com. Jim Cramer calls him the legendary Larry for his over 60 years of trading experience. He may be best known for winning the World Cup Trading Championship, taking $10,000 of real money to $1,000,000.1 in a year. This is Larry's first appearance on This Week in Money. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I've been looking forward to this. Should be a lot of fun today.
Larry, can you first of all tell us about I Really Trade? What's it all about?
Well, you know, most people that give advice in this business don't really trade. So years and years ago, my wife came up with the idea. I just have a website called I Really Trade because even at 81 years of age, I still really trade. I have positions on right now, some good, some bad. And it was a demarcation to separate us from other people in the business. So many people talk but don't really do this. I really feel the ups and downs of the market.
So it's more, you have skin in the game, so you really care on what kind of a result you get. It's not just the theory.
Oh, yeah, I have good days and bad days. It's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's you know, and I can do that because I've been doing this since 1962 when I first started following the markets. That's all I've ever done. I never had a job to speak of. And this is what I do. And people know me around the world for my books and lectures and all that, of course. But still, I think it's always better to say, yeah, the guy's got some experience at this, and not just talk him through his hat.
Your 2024 forecast letter is out. What's in it, and how can people get it?
Well, what's in it is my view of this future based on a couple of really interesting things. I happen to think that cycles can tell us a lot about the market in advance, and not just about stock prices, but a couple of years ago we said inflation would peak out, and it has. We said that GDP would come up, and it has, while everybody else was saying we were going to go through a recession or depression or whatever. That there's a lot of information that cycles can predict. It gives a good idea of the future. We can't know the future exactly, but we have a good idea. But based on cycles and some other work that I've done, and from that, we've been able to make predictions the following year for individual stocks, futures, and the market. We've been doing it, I think, the forecast report 18 years now. We've got followers all over the world, so obviously we've been doing something right.
Now, the big question, I guess, to start off the show is, how did you turn $10,000 into $1.1 million in 1 year?
Well, that was 1987, and I did it with a combination of things. I'll tell the other side of that story in a moment, but I was very focused on the markets. I was young, of course, and I had a short-term swing trading program that I followed, usually, not always. Sometimes I went by the seat of my pants. But mostly, I use a very, very form of aggressive money management. So aggressive that actually what people don't realize, at one point, the account value was $2.2 million. And then the crash of 87 came, and that $2.2 million slipped down to $750,000. And we traded back to $1.1 million by the end of the year, from the middle of October back to the end of the year. So what I realized, the money management can have huge swings up and down. I mean, that was a year you could say I lost $1 million. So I did from the high. So the money management thing is really what extrapolated the gains. And almost every year, the people that win these championships are my students. And they have learned not to be quite as aggressive as I was in money management. You have to be really right to be that aggressive with your money management.
What are the keys to success in trading?
Oh, gosh. I think there's several. clearly you have to have a belief system, a belief in yourself that come hell or high water, you're going to recover. I mean, I've had ups and downs. Probably good to go through a blowout early in your career, which I did way back in the 60s. That helps kind of temper your youthfulness. That you really understand how the markets work, and part of that understanding, this is not a business of perfection. You're never going to be really right. I've made a lot of money, but I haven't been really right. I never, you know, on my winning trades, I didn't have enough contracts on. My losing trades, I had too many contracts on. So if you're a perfectionist, but you got to walk away from this business. You just kind of have to learn to accept, well, that's the market, smile and move forward. I think that's really important. It's how you can come back from your losses, because you will have losses doing this. Can you recover from those? Do they have you or do you have them?
Do you follow cycles?
Oh, yeah. I first started following cycles with the Foundation for the Study of Cycles way back in the 1960s. And since then, we have better software. And I use timing solution software. It's incredible what you can do to find out. Like today, I was working with cycles of real estate. There's a really strong 9-year cycle in median price of houses in America. And so once you know the cycle, you know that, okay, the next time housing price will bottom will be 2028, July. So you can get a good view of the future because cycles, while they're not perfect, will give you the general idea of when we should have a top or bottom in the marketplace. That applies to economic data, applies obviously to the stock market. We are in a bull market and we'll continue in a bull market this year based on my cycle studies.
Is there a seasonality to trading?
Yeah, there's this real strong seasonality. We just saw it in the United States stock market where typically we see a year-end rally. Now, there's a lot of reasons why that. Some people call it a Santa Claus rally. Could be. I think it might be actually due to something else. We'll start to see a sell-off probably in the latter part of June or September, latter part of September this coming year, this year, 2024. So there's times when the market tends to be weaker or stronger. It does not mean that will happen every year. I wrote the first book about seasonals and commodities way back in 1973. They still work, but you have to temper them. They're not perfect. You have to see how the market's doing now versus the seasonal pattern, because the key here is the seasonal pattern is how prices usually trade, how they usually trade. So how are we doing now versus how we usually trade? It's a comparison of those two that allows you to really use seasonality in trading for stocks or futures.
What could be an example of where seasonality really plays a role, like the gold cycle in China, where people like to stock up on it to give it away for weddings?
Well, that's more in India, where they give it away for weddings. But we see that there's been a pretty strong cycle in gold, usually starting right about now. We start to rally in the market, and we rally until, about the 1st of March. So there's a bias in here for short-term, intermediate-term traders to look for buying opportunity in the gold market. But what's happened in the gold market recently, say the last 10, 15 years now, it's not the market that your father or your grandfather used to trade. It's gone from a speculative market, it's going to save us from recessions and depressions, which it never has, by the way, to a commercial, legitimate commodity. This is, as users, it has producers. And if you think that inflation is going to make this market gone up, well, you were dead wrong in the last 2 years when gold went down, well, inflation went up. If you think it's excess government spending is going to do it, gold didn't go up. You think recession is going to cause gold to go up, it's never done that in a recession. And stock market declines, it declines too. It rallies when the users and producers are net long this market or get aggressively long. This is a commodity, and people need to turn off their talk show radios and forget about, it's going to save us from the whatever's going to happen in the future. Gold is like wheat. It's used and produced now. It wasn't the same way when it first started trading back in the 70s, but it is a consumption demand market. Once you understand that, you'll do a lot better trading gold.
What are your thoughts on buy and hold versus active daily trading?
Well, daily trading is a great way to donate your money to somebody else. And there's a reason why. Trend is the basis of all profits. If you don't have a trend, it doesn't matter if it's real estate, stock, pork bellies, gold, you're not going to make any money. So we have to then ask, well, what's a function of trend? What's the cause of trend? And the answer is time. A day trader has 4 or 5 hours to make money. That's it. I have all year to make money, so I can get a small position in a market and capture a huge move and made a lot of money, where the day trader can never do that. To make a lot of money, he has to have a big position, and with the big position, you can get big losses. So the mathematics of day trading are totally stacked against you. Plus, it's physically hard to do day in, day out. Not all days are the same. So to me, intermediate-term swing trading, that's where the big money's been made.
A number of people are predicting stock markets topping very soon, but what do you see ahead for the stock markets over the next few years, and could we see a 50,000 Dow?
Well, I'm not that good at predicting numbers of where we're going to go, but I think I'm pretty good at telling you the general path the market's on. The general path is this market is bullish, which means there will be pullbacks this year in the market, and you want to buy those pullbacks. Later on, coming into next year, 2005, late in the year, I think we're going to start a significant bear market, maybe 2027. I don't have that formulated exactly yet, but I think we're in the last leg of a real good bull market. And you take advantage of that. Don't get carried away by the purveyors of pessimism that are saying it's all over. It isn't. Prices will be higher at the end of this year than they are now.
What is the real rate of inflation?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. And in terms of how I use that for the stock market, that's not really relevant. What I'm concerned about is the rate of change of inflation. Because when the rate of change of inflation gets very high, stock prices have trouble. When the rate of change is low, stock prices rally. Now, currently, the rate of change has come down, as we predicted a couple of years ago. That's bullish for stocks. The actual rate of inflation, yeah, you know, it's hard to say. It's probably 4% right now. But the best measure in terms of predicting stock prices is actually the rate of change of inflation. The market is very responsive to that. And that is in the area where typically in the past we've seen bull market moves.
Most analysts are predicting interest rates will drop this year. Do you agree?
Oh, I hope they don't drop. Oh, because if you look at Fed funds versus the stock market, when Fed funds have gone high and they start to come down significantly, stocks decline. And this is the antithesis of what everybody is expecting, but everybody hasn't looked at the data. The data is really clear. And here's why. When interest rates are raised, what does that really do? It puts money into the economy. It's almost like an increase in money supply because people who have lent money out are getting a higher rate of return. They're getting more money in their pocket. They're going to spend that money. It's going to create profits for companies. When interest rates are high and start to come down, I just look at Fed funds versus stock prices. It's shocking when you see it. Like, why did other people notice this? So I think we get maybe one or two cuts, and I hope that's it, because if we have a precipitous cut, it means the Fed will be taking money out of the economy. The only way they can balance that is to increase money supply. So you want to watch if they increase money supply at the same time they cut rates, well, then that's going to be okay for the economy. But if they don't do that, a significant decrease in interest rates based on the past is incredibly bearish for stock prices.
Do higher interest rates encourage people to save money because they finally get something for their deposits?
What probably does, I think the really big takeaway, though, is that higher interest rates mean more money in circulation. And people don't think of that. They think, well, it's going to be hard on the economy. It is, but also you have more money in the economy with high interest rates. And the other thing to really keep in mind, rates now are relatively low compared to, say, when Jimmy Carter was president. So it's one thing to have rates at 9-10%. It's another thing to have rates at 4-5%. So you can just kind of pencil out in your own business at what interest rate does it really hurt my business? Probably someplace above 8%. It's really hard to make a lot of money. And above 10%, it's really difficult. So as long as rates can stay in that 4-5-6% area, not as bearish as a lot of people think it is.
Is the U.S. dollar likely to remain the world's reserve currency?
Duh. Yeah. And look at all the books. Way back to the last 30 years, these books, The Death of the Dollar, Doomsday of the Dollar, how many books have been written about the death of the dollar, and every one has been wrong. And now, it's going to be Bitcoin. No, it's not going to be Bitcoin. The dollar is still strong because America is the strongest country in the world. You can trust business numbers in America pretty much In China, pretty much you can't trust them. India, you can't trust them. So, yeah, we are a stable economy. We might not be as productive as, say, China or India, but we are more stable. We're a more clear economy. So, yeah, the dollar, it ain't going to go away.
What do you see ahead for the Canadian dollar?
Oh, my gosh, I haven't looked at the Canadian dollar. Let me pull up my charts and I can tell you. I'll tell you this. I used to trade the Canadian dollar a lot, but you know what? I never did all that well on the Canadian dollar. It usually follows the U.S. dollar, so I wouldn't be surprised to see it more or less pair it with the dollar does. You've got some problems up there in Canada, though, because of the socialists, and, you know, socialism is not really good on the currency. Let me pull up my forecast for the U.S. dollar for the Canadian dollar index right now. We'll take a look at it. And I give you this is the nice thing about making my forecast report. We can pull up almost any market and say, yeah, this one we're going to see the highs and lows for the year in that market, whether it's the Indian stock market, Australia, or the Canadian dollar. I'm just about to it now. Yeah, here we go. Canadian dollar, you're going to see a nice, between now and the first part of February, sideways to down. Big rally starting about the middle of May with a peak in the 1st of August. And another buying opportunity about on my birthday, October 6th, and then a rally into the end of the year. So basically, sideways market until May, when May we have a really nice move to the upside.
Do you think Bitcoin is a store of wealth or a belief system? And what do you see ahead for Bitcoin?
Well, that's a good way to put it. It's a belief system. It's a belief system based on nothing, really. I mean, what does Bitcoin produce? Can it grow? Can it expand like Costco or General Motors or Tesla? And no, it's a figment of somebody's imagination. So it's a great trading vehicle. If you want to trade something, yeah, great, trade Bitcoin. But term long term, look at all the scams, the cons, the frauds in this thing. Like, why even get involved where there's that type of problem? I was like, oh, let the young kids trade that. I like low-hanging fruit. Bitcoin is not a low-hanging fruit.
When looking at commodities, how important is the commitment of traders report?
Wow, the commitment of traders report is a be-all, end-all. If you want to understand what's going to happen in the futures market, you know, I was the first person to write about the commitment of traders report way back in the 1970s. One of my mentors, Bill Meehan, had been a member of the Board of Trade and showed me that nobody knew about the Commitment Trade Report. We got it monthly, mailed out to us on a mimeograph sheet a month after it happened. And Bill said, doesn't matter. It's not timely. It's when these guys get substantially long, markets rally. When they're heavily short, they decline. It's not a timing mechanism. It's a setup for a trade. And that's very true now as well. Of course, I wrote the first book about COT report 10, 15 years ago. All that stuff's still valid. When the commercials are heavily long a market, it's going to rally. When they're heavily short, you're going to see a decline. So that gives you a perspective of what that market should do, which means then you have an inside informed bias as which way to trade that market.
What do you see ahead for gold over the next few years?
Gold's going to rally and decline in phase with the commitment trade report. You know, again, people, the gold bugs and some very strong political people think that it's all about the economics and they don't like Joe Biden or they're not going to like Donald Trump or whoever the president is. I don't think it has anything to do with that at all. Gold is cyclical. Gold is a commodity. It's users and producers, and that's what really drives the gold market. And people get off that track. They think that it's something else. If you look at what gold did in the crash of 1987, it went down. In the crash of 2008, it went down. In the pandemic crash of 2020, it went down. It's not going to protect you from Wall Street. That's one of the biggest wives' tales, and the gold community continues to regurgitate this falsehood. It's not right. Don't take my word for it. Look at your charts.
Looking ahead, would you be a buyer of gold or gold stocks?
Not a long-term buyer, no. I think starting late February, my cycles say we should start to rally up into a peak about April, May, and then we start to come back down again into an August 6th buy point, somewhere in that time period, and then we start to rally again. But in terms of long-term buy gold and hope it's going to protect me from whatever evils are out there in the world, no, I'd rather I'd rather be long stocks than I would be long gold. It's a long-term position.
Could currencies be backed by $2,000 an ounce gold?
I don't know why. There's not enough gold in the world to do that. What people don't understand, and it took me a long time. I used to be a gold aficionado, and I had a gold bug, but I certainly thought it was the be-all, end-all. And I finally realized the dollar, these currencies are not backed by gold. We have a fiat currency, and you have to totally change your thinking. You can't think about what has been written about gold and the dollar until you realize we have a fiat currency now. It's not gold-backed. That means two things. Gold has a different driving force of it now because it's not representing a currency. And the dollar doesn't have a relationship to gold, not a tight relationship. So we're in a different world with the fiat currency. And there may be problems with the fiat currency depending on what the Fed does. But if you try to think of von Mises' view of gold and the currencies, you're going to be totally lost. You're going to miss everything.
Do cycles provide insight into where crude will be over the next few years?
Oh, yeah. Crude oil, it's a heavy consumption market. So, there's been strong, typically, around the first of the year, crude oil rallies. Not every year, of course, but it certainly is the way you want to bet it. So there are strong cyclical analysis, and people can see that if they want to get my 2024 forecast report, just go to iReallyTrade.com, look for reports, and the forecast report's there. Crude oil has been a really strong cyclical market and a strong seasonal market as well.
Is what looks like a war on farmers likely to affect agricultural commodities going forward?
Farmers have a real problem. I grew up in Montana, ran for the United States Senate there, and one thing I really got clear in talking with ranchers and farmers, it's a bad business in that you can't say, I want X dollars for my bushel of wheat. You go to the marketplace and the market says, we're going to give you Y dollars for your bushel of wheat. If I'm selling a book or a newspaper or a piece of software, I can say, this is what I want for it. It didn't work that way in the agricultural business. We don't have parity. And until we get parity, agriculture is going to always have that problem. So the thing that you have to keep in mind about futures is that futures are boom and bust. They cycle from low prices to high prices, low prices to high prices, whereas stocks have upward drift. They gradually get better, but there's no boom and bust of commodities because we have an oversupply, and people say, well, I'm not going to eat beef, I'm going to eat chicken, I'm going to eat pork, or I'm going to be a vegetarian, eat tofu, whatever, because the prices are high. Then they come down and say, oh, tofu's too expensive, now I'm going to start to eat beef again. So commodity prices are boom, bust, boom, bust. Commodities are different than stocks. If you don't understand that, you're going to be lost trying to figure out. Years ago, Jimmy Rogers thought there'd be a huge bull market in commodities because more people, et cetera. And we never had it. Why? Because that's not the nature of commodities. Their commodities are boom busts.
Does it look like symbol LIT, the global X lithium and battery tech ETF, has bottomed?
Yeah, it looks like it has. The question, of course, is how long is this going to continue? And let me pull up some data on that for us. Let's see where I have that. It's going to have a rally this year, I think, a pretty decent rally. A long-term rally, though, I think you need to keep in mind it's going to be a trading range affair, and we'll see a little weakness later in the year.
Are China's economic troubles likely to affect markets this year?
Well, they're going to affect their markets. The problem that China has is they're an energy-dependent country, as is Japan. So the price of crude oil really lays heavily on what happens in China. My books are all in Chinese. I was lecturing there 20 or 30 years ago. I first went to China in 1980, so I really watched the country grow. And it's changed radically from when I first went there to being a modern country now. But they still have problems there. They built too much. They have too much debt. Will it be a great place to invest? Very selectively. But to just buy the Shanghai Index, I wouldn't want to do that.
We keep hearing markets are controlled. If true, are you trading the manipulation?
That's a loser's lament. Oh, the market's controlled. I'm not making money. Look, I have friends that are billionaires, multi-billionaire guys that trade the market. They call me up and say, what's the market doing today? if there was this great manipulation, I've had bankers from Switzerland call me up. What do you think of gold? I was going to ask them what was going on with gold, right? They would know. They want to pay me to find out what I think of gold. So this idea that market manipulated, that's people that are losers trying to blame it on somebody else instead of their own judgment call or their own emotional decision. At times, sure, there can be some manipulation in the market. Does it happen day in, day out, year in and year out? I don't think so. No way.
I guess it's like golfers who blame the equipment and not the fact that they're just lousy golfers.
Yeah, it's so easy to blame something or someone else, or it's, you know, the weather outside or my gloves or the grass today was slippery or whatever. That's just a natural human emotion. And to be a good trader, you have to get rid of the natural emotions that we have. Everything is upside down. The logic of the marketplace, when things look bad, I sell. When things look really good, I sell. When they look really bad, I buy. And that's totally upside down. Good news is bad news for me. Bad news is good news for me. And the same thing with, I didn't screw up. I can't blame this on somebody else like I can with everything else in my life. It's, you have to totally change your emotional perspective, intellectual perspective, to be good at this.
Larry, where can people follow you and subscribe to your products?
Well, they can go to iReallyTrade.com, and I have my forecast 2024 report, which is ready, that shows all the major markets of the world, what I expect them to do, of course, the Dow, the S&P, and the stocks in America, and about 30 of the most actively traded stocks, and the all the big seven, the FANG stocks, and a lot of other good stocks, and all futures. So it's a over 100-page report. It's not just like one sheet. It's a lot of work, and also my economic forecast based on my cyclical studies of things like GDP and inflation and interest rates to get a good fundamental idea. I really believe charts are not enough. You have to have a reason for charts, and the reason really is fundamentals. Fundamentals drive the markets. Charts show where they went.
Larry, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
My pleasure. Look forward to it. Good luck trading to everybody.
My guest has been Larry Williams, founder of I Really Trade, online at iReallyTrade.com. He was speaking to us from the U.S. Virgin Islands. Coming up, Martin Straith, next on This Week in Money.
Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Martin Straith, founder of Trend News Online at thetrendletter.com. He's speaking to us from Coquitlam, BC, which is just east of Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Martin.
Oh, well, thank you, Jim. And hey, let me wish you and all your listeners a very happy and healthy and prosperous New Year.
Martin, you're going to be at the World Outlook Financial Conference in Vancouver, BC on February 2nd and 3rd. Will you be presenting? What will you be presenting on, and how can people sign up to see it?
Yeah, we'll be there. This will be, I think it's our fifth year there. We'll be taking part in their investing in energy segment. So that's going to start on the Friday afternoon. I think we're on at 3:30. So we'll be covering various energy investment ideas that we like. We tell investors what we are buying, why, and what we are selling and why. The nice thing about these conferences, in person, you get to show the charts. And we find that when we can show clear trends, either developing or already well entrenched, that it makes it so much easier for the average investor to understand what's driving the markets. One of the things we always hear at these conferences is that people say, damn it, I missed that trade. People are always kicking themselves for not being, early enough or for missing a key turning point. And, you know, our attitude, it's, you know, it's like catching a train. If you miss one, there's always another one coming. And sometimes those missed opportunities, they open up the chance to catch a train going in the other way. And, you know, when the markets turn, it's really important to have hedging strategies. And with the, you know, inverse exchange-traded funds or those ETFs, it makes it really easy to short pretty much any sector. So, you know, be it currency, gold, the S&P 500, oil even. So, and that's when those markets turn down. So when a sector reverses, using, you know, hedging strategies is a great way to not just protect yourself in a correction or bear market, but to actually make some great gains. So the presentation will be primarily about energy plays. But, you know, if people come visit our booth, we'll be delighted to discuss all these different sectors, you know, commodities, you know, and the equities, because it's all connected. And that's what we do. We connect the dots. So hopefully many of your listeners are going to be able to attend, you know, come to our presentation, come visit us at our booth. We're also going to be doing a draw for the drone. All the proceeds there are going to go to the Heads Up Guys for Men. You know, I met the founder there a few weeks ago. He's UBC professor, Dr. John Ogrodzinchuk. He's a psychiatrist, and he started this organization back in 2015 when he really realized in that practice that there's a real lack of services for men. And so now he's got, you know, on that website, he's had over 1 million visitors. It's funded totally by donations. So obviously they need the donations. One thing that I found really interesting, he mentioned that the two biggest issues for older men is loneliness and missing the sense of purpose. And so, you know, any of your listeners, if that sounds like you or somebody you know, go to the site, headsupguys.org. There's a ton of information there. They've got some different tests, online tests you can do to help you kind of assess where you are. So it's a great, it's just a great charity to support. And I think, you know, at the conference, it really fits kind of the age group. So drop on by, you know, donate, like I say, join, put into the raffle, and, you know, maybe you'll win a drone and you'll be helping out a really good cause. And by the way, so Annabelle, who's she's the event coordinator there, I was just talking to her yesterday. She did say there's still some tickets still available. Go to the website, mikesmoneytalks.ca, and you can get all the information there.
The CME Group's FedWatch tool is predicting a 62% chance the Fed cuts 25 basis points on March 20th. And a 4.3% chance they'll cut 50 basis points. What's your take?
Yeah. You know, it's the markets are just so fixated on the Fed. And, yeah, they are eagerly anticipating the Fed to start cutting rates. It's really interesting. Just today, we just got a bunch of jobs data. So in Canada, huge miss. You know, they said there was only 100 jobs created in December in the whole country, which is sound quite bizarre, but that was, you know, and they were expecting 15,000 jobs, so a bit of a miss there. And then in the U.S., they had the opposite. They had a big gain of 215 or 16,000, and they were only expecting 160,000. I got to say, Jim, I mean, these government stats are so unreliable, and they revise them after the fact. So last month, the U.S. revised their job gains by almost 45%. Yet nobody reports it, you know, because it's old news. But anyways, either way, that's the data we're given, and that's what we got to work with. And so with these job gains in the U.S. reportedly much higher than expected, and the wages much higher, the market reacted really quickly this morning. And so they were expecting now the Fed would have to hold off cuts. And then we get 2 hours later, we've got the ISM service data came out, and that showed real weakness. And so now the markets immediately pivoted, and now they're expecting, well, the Fed's rates are back on. We saw the U.S. dollar drop like an anvil. The stocks just spiked. And this was all within 2 hours. So as we sit here now, just before closing, it's all leveled off. I'm just looking now. It's just down a couple of points here. So the market's down slightly. But what a wild day. And it just shows how hyped up these markets are these days. You know, every little data point fuels these investors. And just what we saw today, you know, good news was seen as bad news. And then all of a sudden, yay, we got some bad news here. So that means it's good news for the markets. So getting back to the Fed, you know, it's going to be really a delicate balance, I think. You know, if they cut too soon, then inflation is going to ramp up again. And if they wait too long, then you're going to get deflation and very likely a recession. And, you know, if they see a recession, then they're going to aggressively have to cut. So just some for your listeners, you know, I posted a video about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it shows about what happens when the Fed aggressively cuts rates. You know, your listeners can look at it. It's on the Trendletter YouTube channel. The video is only, it's not even 10 minutes long, but it really clearly shows you what the markets do when the Fed starts cutting rates. And what happens is that the markets decline. And you think about it, and it makes a lot of sense. If the markets tank, and if the economy is tanking, you know, that's not going to be good news for business. So stocks are not going to do well in a declining economy. Now, back to the Fed, you know, will they start cutting rates in March? Sounds really aggressive to me, but, you know, it's really going to be driven by inflation and employment data. The inflation data is usually a bit more accurate than all this employment data we keep seeing. Again, for us, it really doesn't matter. We watch the trends. We have strategies if the market's going to continue to rise, and we have hedging strategies if the market's going to fall into a correction. So we watch the trends, and when we see a change, you know, we alert our subscribers.
Larry Williams, in the interview just before this one, said when interest rates are relatively high, it's actually good for the economy because it puts more money out there, and it also encourages people to save instead of spending money that's losing its value every day.
Well, yeah, you think about it. I mean, if interest rates are slowly rising, I mean, not like what we just had, yeah, where the Fed was, you know, panicking because they overshot to the low side and then they overshoot to the up. Mm. But back in the day when things were more normal, that's a good sign. If the economy is growing, then interest rates are rising. You got, you know, slowly increasing inflation. It all makes sense. The problem we've had in the last couple of decades is, you know, these central banks are trying to manipulate everything. They're trying to, you know, force inflation. I mean, remember back in 2009 when we had that crash, you know, the Fed then tried to get inflation up. So they, you know, they artificially kept interest rates low and they couldn't get inflation. I mean, we didn't get any inflation until we had COVID. And that's, you know, then the government's, you know, the government, the Fed started pumping money out. The governments all started handing out free money. And all of a sudden you had inflation because the supply chains were shut down. So, you know, your previous guest is right. Like in a normal world, that's what you want. You want to see slow rising, you know, the economy's rising, inflation's rising slightly, and interest rates slowly rise. But that's not what we've been having in the last, you know, decade or so.
The stock market has followed your projection so far with a slow start to 2024. Thoughts on how the stock market could progress for the rest of this year?
Well, yeah, you know, in 2023, you know, we look at seasonality. I mean, it's just one of the things we look at. And, you know, it's just one of the metrics you can use. But it was very interesting. 2023, the S&P 500 really followed its seasonality pattern very closely. And, you know, if we see that continue into 2024, then you can expect the decline starting to kick in, you know, around mid-January. So that's, you know, another week or so away. And then typically we see a fairly bumpy ride into mid-March, and then things should start to move higher. So market sentiment, you know, got extremely bullish over the last few months. You know, this unbelievable anticipation of the Fed cutting rates has been a massive tailwind for stocks. And that's what we typically see. You know, when you have this anticipation that the rates are not going to go up anymore, that excites the markets. But as we just discussed, you know, when we showed in our video, it's when the Fed actually starts cutting rates, that's when the stock market typically tanks. So, you know, a Fed rate cut suggests that the economy is in trouble. And again, businesses do not do well in the declining economy. And if businesses aren't doing well, you don't want to be buying stocks in them because the business is going down. So maybe the Fed can somehow manage to cut rates just enough to stave off a recession, and perhaps even directing the economy to a soft landing. But I got to tell you, the Fed's record of being able to manage the economy, doing the right thing at the right time, both in up and down markets, is horrible. And so it makes me really skeptical that they could pull that off. But hey, anything's possible. It would be great if they could do it, but I'm not holding my breath. So for the markets, long term, I'm quite bullish equities. But I do think in the short and midterm, we got some concerns. Very short term, like I said, we're entering that seasonally weak period for equities. Where we get, somewhere around the middle of January, we expect to see an impending, spike in volatility, and that tends to have the potential to really rattle the markets. But if that happens, we do expect that that would be more of a buying opportunity. The big risk here is what we just chatted about. If the Fed starts cutting rates, that suggests that they think a recession is coming, and a recession is not good for stocks. But longer term, one of the things we got this year, this is an election year. Election years, the incumbents, they love to hand out all kinds of goodies for voters. The millennials are the big group, the big voter group that all these parties are going to go after. So you can expect a lot of freebies from the Biden administration, a lot of good stuff for the millennials. And that will give them optimism. That will give them more money. And, that will be good for the economy, is the theory. And overall, long-term, provided we don't see another black swan event, so, we've got China invading Taiwan or an escalation of the Middle East war, I think the markets could do really well this year.
Over the past couple of months on This Week in Money, you've called for gold to break above $2,070 an ounce and ultimately break through that very strong resistance point of $2,320 an ounce. Gold did briefly set a closing high of $2,093 in late December. What do you see ahead for gold?
Yeah, well, that 27 resistance level, or 2070, sorry, resistance level, that's been a target of ours for months. And gold is now in a really strong seasonal position. Typically, it runs into late February, where it usually pauses. Then we typically will see, frequently we'll see gold, pick up steam again in March, and run higher right into, late spring. Now, one of the key factors for gold is that you got U.S., Canada, and most of the developing world, they're running on unsustainable, debts. And the result of those debts and the cost of servicing those debts, that diminishes the purchasing power of each of those currencies. So we also expect that the central banks will soon want to be getting back to be much more dovish, so lowering interest rates. Lower interest rates are very positive for gold. Gold doesn't pay a dividend. So when interest rates go really high, then gold doesn't, it doesn't compete well, because, investors could simply get, they get a 5% yield on a bond where gold doesn't pay anything. So when the rates start to drop, though, that's when gold becomes a much more attractive investment. So right now, the market's factoring our Fed rate cut, and that would be good for gold. So right now, today, I'm just looking. So gold's about $2,050 right here. So it's up about $5 on Friday. It's still above its uptrend line from the October low, which is bullish. If it can remain above that trend line, that's very good news. But we do need to see it push through and hold above that 2070 number we keep talking about. And if it can do that, I believe that run of 2300 to 2320 is very doable. I think the gold's in its really early stages of a multi-year run here. Now, support set 2010 and then 1925. Now, the big thing, though, that what we're looking for and that has not happened yet is we're waiting for the miners to catch up to the bull end. That's something that needs to happen. before that we can really say that gold's starting to take off.
War drums and the Red Sea shipping lanes. Maersk, for example, says it's no longer going to send its container ships through the Red Sea. Is this bullish for the price of crude?
Yeah, things are getting a bit nasty. It looks pretty ugly over there. There's a lot of warships in that region right now. You know, the attacks on these container ships, you know, it's now, as you just mentioned, you know, most shipping companies now diverting. So they're not going through the Suez now. They're working their way, taking the long route, you know, down southern Africa off the Cape Horn route. And that's what that's doing, though. It's adding up to 170% to the container cost for shipping goods. And obviously, these ships have to travel a lot further distance. That in itself is going to increase demand. And again, if we get, you know, something exploding happening here, then that could really push up prices. So oil prices have been on a steep decline from late September high. You know, we had, I think it was last time I was your show, we were talking about this, that, you know, you've got the OPEC plus outside countries. So you got the U.S., you got Iran. They've been pumping up crude, Rick, like a really high clip here. So now this week we saw an increase in gasoline and diesel inventories. But like you just said, you know, the tension in the Middle East, that's offset those production gains. So oil's just kind of bouncing around here. But it broke above its downtrend line in late December, and it's still above that, so that's bullish. And based on seasonality, you know, oil typically bottoms through, you know, January and then has a very strong February. Then it typically pauses, you know, into early March, and then it's usually quite strong into late June. So, you know, we should be seeing a bottoming pattern here. We did actually put out a buy signal on gold recently, or sorry, it's oil. So, yeah, I think that this is, if somebody doesn't have a position at all, this might be a time to take a look. One of the things we just used is the USO, which is basically like an ETF for oil. So it's more of a direct play on oil. So now, certainly with all that going on in the Middle East, the seasonal pattern certainly could get blown out of the water, so to speak. So oil could certainly spike. But today it's up about $1.70, again, on those Red Sea tensions. It's up about $73.85 right now. Key support sitting at that triple bottom we saw back in March and June, so around $66. Near-term resistance is $75.70. So we're at $73.85 now, so, you know, about a couple bucks higher. And then we've got that triple top at $78. We saw that in November. So if we can see oil breaking, you know, it's broken through its downtrend line, and if it can break through 78 and hold above that level, I can see that extending this rally well into March and then ultimately into June. Our target high in this kind of time frame would be about $80 to the $85 range. Now, longer term, you know, we've got the demand issue. We keep talking about this. India and, you know, these other emerging countries, they're growing, they're expanding. I mean, they don't even have electricity in parts of their country, so they need more energy. They are going to ramp up demand. They see everybody that has in the West that has refrigerators and has electricity, has all these cool things. They want stuff too. And we've also got China. You know, it's struggled, but its economy is starting to show signs of improvement. So that's also going to boost demand. And then again, you switch to the supply side. You know, we've got this lack of investment. You know, capital expenditures are down 30, 40 years lows. Rig counts are continuing to decline. And, you know, the reason is you've got the COP28 group. You've got governments globally. They do not like fossil fuels. So they've increased the windfall taxes. They've increased regulations. They don't allow any new permitting. So, you know, you just combine that. You've got an increase in demand. You've got global concerted efforts to stop supply. That's going to result in a huge supply problem over the next few years. So, you know, we're looking for $100 oil over, you know, the next year, and likely 150 and higher over the next few years.
What do you see ahead for the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
Well, I see this all the time. Currencies, it's really all about the U.S. dollar. If the U.S. dollar is strong, then that negatively will affect the other currencies. It will also negatively affect commodities, equities, and precious metals. And then when the U.S. dollar is weak, all those other things rally. So it's really interesting, you know, what happened today. You know, again, we were talking earlier about, you know, the U.S. jobs and wage data came out early and it was, you know, much stronger. So the U.S. dollar spiked, you know, the stock market went down, everything else went down, because everybody assumed now the Fed's going to have to hold off cutting rates. And then, again, we got those ISM numbers. All of a sudden, everything turned around. You know, all of a sudden, it's weaker. That means that the U.S. dollar's dropping, and that means that the market goes up. Like, it's just crazy. But the logic here that we've been watching is, you know, the bad news is good. Good news, you know, good news is bad. So the bad news is good meant that the Fed might cut again in March. The markets were obviously believed that the ISM data is much more reliable than the government data. So since late October, the U.S. dollar has been in a deep decline until late December. Now, that October time frame was key turning point for many sectors. We saw bond yields down. We saw other currencies up, we saw stocks up, and we saw gold up. So it's important for your investor to understand that all of these sectors are connected. So one point that I find really interesting, the U.S. dollar's been declining since that October time frame, and it's primarily because the U.S. yields have declined. So, you know, the U.S. two-year yield dropped down to, you know, it's 4.32% today. But the yields in the most other countries are even lower. You know, in the UK, it's 4.16. Canada is 3.99. Germany is 2.55. And Japan is 0.19%. So we've got this scenario where the markets are reacting that the U.S. dollar, the Fed's going to cut so that the U.S. dollar is going to lose value, that all these other central banks are looking at doing the same thing. So, you know, I think that you're going to see the Bank of Canada, the ECB, and potentially the Bank of England all probably cut rates before the Fed does. And if that happens, then you're going to see those currencies start to lose value to the U.S. dollar. Now, you know, it's not likely going to happen for months. And then, of course, then if the Fed actually leads the way and cuts first, well, then the U.S. dollar is going to fall. Again, this is all connected. People need to understand that. So near-term resistance for the U.S. dollar is $1.08. Ultimately, I can see the U.S. dollar hitting $1.15. Near-term support, about 101, and then about $1. For Canada, again, it's all connected to the U.S. dollar. This week, the Canadian was quite weak. We had poor factory numbers. Today, again, was really interesting. We had the very poor data from Canada with, you know, only 100 new jobs. Typically, you would have thought, well, that would have pushed the Canadian dollar lower. But, oh, no. You know, we had the weak ISM data coming out of the U.S., and so that made expectations again that the U.S. would cut sooner, and then that strengthened the Canadian dollar. So again, this is all connected. As I mentioned earlier, we expect the Bank of Canada will probably cut before the Fed does, which would, you know, that would hit the Canadian dollar versus the U.S. dollar. So the Canadian is trading today at about 75.15. Resistance is about 75.80. Near-term support's at 73.25. But, you know, I got to say, longer term, I think the Canadian dollar is going to drop below 70 cents in the next year.
What do you see ahead for the euro and yen?
Well, the euro is, a near-perfect inverse relationship to the U.S. dollar. So the data today, we saw inflation in the eurozone, jumped from 2.4% up to 2.9%. So that was a bit of a surprise. So that had traders now expecting that the ECB would have to hold off cutting rates in March, where a lot of people were expecting them to actually cut rates. So many economists are now forecasting the ECB will cut rates in April. But again, that may have to change. I think this stuff's all going to drag out longer than most people think. It will really depend on which central bank cuts first. If the ECB cuts before the Fed, then the euro is going to drop. If the Fed leads the way and cuts first, then the euro is going to rise. And then if we look at the yen, it's got a real interesting story. You know, while the other central banks have been aggressively raising rates to fight inflation, Japan did nothing. You know, the U.S. Fed rate is 5.5%, Canada's 5%. I mean, Japan's central bank rate is still at minus 0.1%. So capital has fled the Japanese yen because they've been seeking higher yields elsewhere. But for months, you know, people have been waiting for the Bank of Japan to intervene. And there's been all this, you know, people jumping into the market expecting, well, this will be the time. And this has been going on for about 4 or 5 months now. And all that time, they've been waiting for the Bank of Japan to give it a boost. But they've been frustrated every single time because the Bank of Japan has just left the rate the same. But since mid-November, we've seen the yen rising. And that's because more and more rumors and expectation the Bank of Japan is finally going to raise rates. But again, with the expectation that the Fed will cut rates soon, that also boosted the yen. But this week, the yen was falling again. Started the year, it's down 2% already. And the main reason is the traders were giving up hope on the Bank of Japan that they would raise rates. And now the reassessing of the Fed's actually going to cut as soon as they had hoped. So in the big picture, you know, with all these currencies, Jim, I see that the U.S. dollar is still the least ugly currency. I see that the Europe and in Japan, their economies are in worse shape than the U.S. So ultimately, I think the U.S. dollar is just going to remain stronger for the next couple of years.
You posted a very telling chart on X this week showing the U.S. debt level has surpassed $34 trillion. That's a number that's, I think, unimaginable or, you know, even comprehensible, you know, for a person. Or anyway, that equates to over $100,000 per person in the U.S. Is the U.S. government ever going to stop spending more than they take in?
Yeah, you know, it's almost laughable if it wasn't so frightening. You know, it's absolutely staggering how much the U.S. government has spent over the last few years, especially since COVID. You know, yeah, as you say, $34 trillion. And you think about that. So here's some comparisons. So $34 trillion, you take that, that's the U.S. debt. That equates to the economies of China, Germany, Japan, India, and the United Kingdom combined. So you think of that. The U.S. debt total equals the combined value of the economies of those five countries. So as you say, $101,000 per person, man, woman, and child. It works out to $259,000 per household. It works out to $264,000 per taxpayer. But here's the number that really to me is, if every U.S. household contributed $1,000 a month toward paying down the national debt, and the debt did not rise again, $1, it would take 22 years to pay off that debt. You know, the interest on the U.S. debt is now $1 trillion. So that's more than they spend on the defense, Medicare, or Social Security. And, you know, Jim, this is an election year. So you know that they are not going to stop spending. They're going to increase spending dramatically. Now, in Canada, you know, we hear that and you go, oh, my God, that's crazy what's happening in the state. I mean, Canada, the numbers aren't quite as bad, but they're not good either. I mean, according to CBC, since 2015, so when Trudeau first took over as prime minister, the debt in Canada has doubled from $613 billion to $1.23 trillion. Now, since we have 40 million people now in Canada, that equates to $30,750 per person in Canada. The Trudeau government has increased the size of the government by 40% since 2015. So I don't know about you, Jim, but do you feel that you're getting 40% more service from our government over the last 8 years? You know, I think it's pretty clear that neither the U.S. or Canadian government have any plans to cut these massive spending, so we can expect more huge deficits and debts.
Martin, you have three services available, the Trend Letter, Technical Trader, and Trend Disruptors. Can you tell us about the services and how people can get them?
Yeah, sure. The Trend Letter, well, that was the original, so that's 22 years old. We first started publishing it, what was it, 2002, I guess it was. So it's basically for long-term investors. It covers equities, currencies, precious metals, commodities, and bonds. It comes out once a week. Then we have the Trend Technical Trader. That's for a little bit more active investors, but also long-term investors. You know, it was once a hedging service, but it also covers equities, precious metals, commodities, and includes our gold technical trader, which is a proprietary service. And then the third one is Trend Disruptors, for speculators with risk capital affordability. Service invests in disruptive ideas. So we're talking AI, virtual and augmented reality, 5G, cloud, Internet of Things. Also, Jim, we've got our free service called Headlines. That's where we review what's happening in the markets every morning. And then we send out the headlines that we feel investors should be aware of. And then investors could simply read the headline. And if they want to read the actual details, they just click on the headline, and then they can read the article. And again, there's no spam in here. We're not trying to oversell anything. That's just pure stuff. You get the articles every day. So if any of your listeners have any questions about any of our services, they can email us at info@thetrendletter.com. And that's all one word, thetrendletter.com.
Martin, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
My pleasure, Jim. And again, Happy New Year.
My guest has been Martin Strath, founder of Trend News Online at thetrendletter.com. He was speaking to us from Coquitlam, BC, which is just east of Vancouver. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Larry Williams, and Martin Strath. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.